Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Every smile hides a secret, and some of them are deadly. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, Robin Dreek.
The Delphi murders have haunted the public for years, but the deeper we dig, the more things don't seem to really add up. Richard Allen is behind bars, convicted on questionable evidence at best, while glaring red flags about Ron Logan were ignored. Why did investigators shift their focus? What behavioral cues were missed? And how does tunnel vision impact justice? We're joined right now by retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program and True Crime Today contributor, Robin Dreek, a master of behavioral analysis, I will say. I like that title. Do you like the master of behavioral analysis? I think that's a good one.
You know, I saw when you wrote that in this week and I was like, huh, I started chuckling. Every time you hear things like that, you give a chuckle because, you know, we never see ourselves as masters or experts in anything. We're just,
sure,
you know, living our lives, getting data points, but it is fun. Yeah. It is a great joy to interpret human behavior, mm-hmm, so we can try to understand the craziness of the world around us. So yeah, interesting point you made there, Tony, was what behavioral clues were missed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything was missed. Ignored is the word.
Mm-hmm.
That, and like you said, you know, we've been covering this case for a while, and it's been around a long time, and it kind of took an ebb and a flow onto it.
Yeah,
and different than every other case we've covered as well. Since he's been convicted and sentenced, we're diving even deeper, and I mean, I've never been on the side that he's guilty because no one's actually showed me the behavior pattern that says he did it, regardless of confessions or motives. I put all that aside. You just look for patterns of behavior. His patterns of behavior never really fit someone that would do this crime.
No.
And so when a pattern of behavior doesn't fit a crime, you're looking for evidence because it's either got to be one, the other, or both. Neither is present except for a bullet that they found on the ground there. And so now you start looking at other people in the area, and other people fit a pattern of behavior that were totally ignored.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the first thing you want to do, and I know I'm rambling here, and thing you want to do in these situations when you might have law enforcement investigative biases, because we all have them, when we get emotionally tied, especially if we live, work, and play in the same community that we're serving, like a small town like Delphi, you will have investigative biases because you want to solve crimes. You're emotionally invested in the people in the community. And so that's when it's really, really critical to have that objectivity come in and give you that loving critic view of things. And that's what they did. They had the FBI come in. And when I saw the FBI search warrant and all they were seeing in someone else, I was like, oh, there was your loving critic. There was all the behaviors they saw that were not missed. They were ignored. And I was like, wow.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, we've given the benefit of the doubt for a long time onto this, maybe to the investigators to a certain extent of, well, was this overlooked? We use terms like that, overlooked, missed, things like that. This is willful ignorance with the Ron Logan being part of this. I mean, I want to tell the audience, in case they're just catching this, I want to set this up so people understand just what happened here, and then get your perspective from the FBI on what the hell happened here. Basically, when the girls were killed, they started looking around. The FBI came in, started investigating, and the FBI took the lead, but they worked with local investigators, the state police, and the Delphi authorities. And they dug deep into this. Ron Logan was their main suspect. I don't know if he's ever truly been dismissed as a main suspect, other than the fact that he's dead. They had all the info. They went into his home. They did the whole warrant to go in and search his property for probable cause. The agent even said, I believe this is the person who killed these girls. There's obviously a lot of things here that play into it being Ron Logan. From the location of where he was, his cell phone data puts him at the crime scene of the time of the crime. He calls his friend and says, I need an alibi for this time to this time. Before the bodies were even found, the list goes on and on. A history of violence, a history of abuse, a history, allegations from his ex-girlfriend of being uncomfortable seeing him around little girls. Nope. And all of this, I mean, I'm just scratching the surface of how many things point to Ron Logan. FBI goes in, does their investigation, and then Delphi kicks him out. They're like, we're good. We got this. Our Keystone cops are going to handle this from now on. Oh, by the way, what's this silver platter you have here for us? Oh, it's basically everything on Ron Logan that shows him being the main suspect and likely at least being bridge guy, at the very least. I mean, it's crazy. And what did the local authorities do? We think we're going to look somewhere else. We still don't know what the FBI got because they're not going to obviously reveal it, and the local authorities aren't going to reveal it. So it's just sitting there. God knows what they found in that house. The question is, why was none of that ever acted on or looked into further? Tell me about that a little bit, the dynamics of when you have the FBI involved in an investigation and the local Keystone cops say, we're good.
Yeah, this is what I call all the elements of stupid are present.
Yeah.
I wish there was a great answer for this that I had. I really don't. I mean, this one is really so befuddling to me. So the locals always have the jurisdiction to be lead on these investigations, and only when it's a federal crime does the FBI take over with supporting roles of everyone else. And so FBI was in a supporting role in this. And so it is at the discretion of the locals, and the local prosecutor is really the one that is going to say what they want, what they don't need, what they want to go after, and what resources they want to try to get. And so they're really the one that is going to be driving, you know, how they want to prosecute this case. And for some reason, again, I have no clue. I mean, Tony, some things just get so befuddling. Again, when we don't know, when things don't make sense, we've said this so many times on the show, when things don't make sense, there's a lot of things we're not seeing. There's a lot of priorities of individuals that are involved here, pain points, friction points, mm-hmm. things that are causing people shame, that they're blocking out, that they're keeping from public sight, because if it doesn't make sense, there's a lot of crap being hidden. And I'm with you on this one. Before, I'm always defaulting to mistakes, doubling down on stupid, doubling down on mistakes, you know, avoiding embarrassment. You know, when you make a first misstep in an investigation, it's easier to just double down on it because you don't think anyone's going to pay attention. But when you look at the earlier stages of this investigation from years ago, like 7 years ago, all the things that were done very properly, very good on an investigation, because when a crime happens, you take in data from everywhere. No one is innocent. Mm-hmm. Everyone's innocent till proven guilty. But I mean, you assess everyone in a whole area and you look for data. You look for evidence, both behaviorally and materially, that's going to start giving you a filter of where to focus all your effort. And all the filters that we saw earlier on were not with Richard Allen. Now, granted, he admitted to his presence there during the same time frame. So
voluntarily.
All right, take a look. Yeah, absolutely. Which, again, fits a pattern of behavior of someone who wouldn't do this. I mean, all his behaviors were very – and again, I keep going back to happy people don't kill people. People that are loved and admired by others and have good family relationships don't kill people unless there's a major, major psychotic event that happens. Mm-hmm. That deviates from pattern behavior. But in general, that does not happen. The stats don't support that. And no criminal activity, no criminal background, no anything that pointed towards Richard Allen as opposed to mm-hmm. Ron. As well as an X that says it looks like him on the bridge.
Yes. Oh, let's I want to bring that up here again real quick so everybody can see it for a second. This is Bridge Guy. This is Ron Logan. Bridge Guy. Ron Logan. So the whole story that, well, there's no real evidence, there's nothing that really points. And this was done, this comparison right here, done by the woman who holds the world record, literally the Guinness Book of World Records, for solving the most crime through forensic analysis and things of that nature. It's, again, all of this ignored, all of this present, all of this data Delphi investigators had. But we're going to look somewhere else. I mean, and we're not even getting into Keegan Klein here, the guy who's into child porn, who's now in prison, who was communicating with one of the girls and planned on meeting her that very day.
One of the greatest things we look for in murder cases is connection between the victim and you know, the assailant, you know, the murderer. And again, Richard Allen, no connection that we saw or knew of, and these other two did have connections. You know, Ron knew the father, from what I understand, and you have this other person that's into child porn. And so, I mean, just, it makes no sense.
I mean, when you're trying to analyze this and figure out what the hell broke down here, and obviously this is just pure conjecture, just your own opinion on the Delphi case and what is going on here. What comes to your mind where you see this sort of breakdown, where they're literally given a silver platter with Ron Logan on it, and they just go, we're good? But they were given that, though, after they even went through the house and looked through all of his things, and were looking for evidence to connect him, like fibers and things of that nature, and we don't know what they find, what they found. The answer is not they didn't find anything. The answer is we don't know. It's never been released, nor did Delphi follow up on it. What the hell is going on here? It really starts to get into the territory of what did they find in that house, and would it have affected someone more than just Ron Logan? Maybe somebody in power, and I don't know who that would be.
So in general, what we've seen in cases in the past where there's things like this don't add up and don't make sense is when people generally will look away from what obviously makes sense to look at, it's because there's some sort of connection that's unbeknownst to the rest of us. And so my conjecture is that there is a relationship between Ron and any other subject that might have come along. Because again, small town, between him and the people conducting the investigation, it could have been one, could have been multiples. There was things that did not want to be disclosed by someone somewhere that at least one person, if not multiple, said, it's good if we don't look deeper here. And so let's look for someone else we can point it to. And who did they wind up going to? The one person who did not grow up there, I think, when did he move there? I think he lived there about 10 years.
Yeah, he wasn't a local. And if you've ever been in a town that you're not a local in, that's fairly small and tight-knit, it's hard to really integrate yourself quite often because they got their cliques, they got their everything. I mean, Ron Logan's in the same house, I think, that he grew up in. He's been in there 50-some years. It's hard to kind of get into that circle. So yeah, when you're looking for the suspect, is that just kind of a blinder that you have on of, we have this community, we're all good, even the weird guys, we're all good, it must be this outsider?
Yeah, circling and protecting their own is what it looks like. There's one of those people, you know, whether it's Ron or the other guy, I'm thinking it's Ron, was connected with someone doing something, someone was in cahoots with him with something or drinking, but I don't know what it is or what it was. But there's something there that we're not seeing that inspired someone to shift away. And then from the people overseeing the investigator from shifting away said, that's a good idea.
And a lot of people did. That's the weird part. I mean,
prosecutors to judges.
Yeah.
It makes you say, what the friggin' hell?
Yes. And I mean, I can, not that it excuses it, but I can kind of understand where maybe somebody, one of the investigators in Delphi, saw some sort of connection and a road they did not want to go down, because either it was going to harm them or it was going to harm somebody that they didn't want to harm, or something that they didn't want to expose that maybe has something to do with this case or something else entirely. But you have a judge that acted insanely suspicious throughout this entire trial, dismissing evidence left and right that should have been there, denying hearings, not even having hearings where legally she was supposed to. But they're like, no, we're going to move him to maximum security prison and put him in solitary confinement, but we're not going to let his attorneys know about it. And we're going to do it in the middle of the night. And they just did it, and they got away with it. It's not like they should have been able to do that. Like, there are laws and rules in place, but it was more so maybe we'll ask for forgiveness later. And then he sits and he breaks down into, you know, the bumbling mess that he turned into after being basically tortured for a year, and is finally saying, I killed the girls. And he's writing like a 2-year-old that's watching Romper Room on a piece of paper. I killed the girls. I hope I can say I'm sorry. I mean, it's in weird letters. It was nuts. But going back to the judge, that's what I really do not get. Either this is Gull is just really, really zealous and just feels like she had it in her mind that this is the guy, and she's relying on these investigators to be telling the truth, and just didn't look much deeper into the case, because then she'd have to say, I was wrong on this. But she was the second judge on the case as well. The other one recused himself. So for her to come in and act like that, that pattern of behavior doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me either. And I'm not accusing her of trying to cover something up, but I don't know. I mean, I guess it's just a big question mark as to how her behavior really played in to everyone else's behavior here from the Delphi community that really, you know, followed the pattern of, we are going to put a roadblock up at every single stop we can, whether it makes sense or not, to anything that may point to someone other than the man that they convicted, Richard Allen.
You know, it also starts making more, even more sense is Richard Allen's two defense attorneys. You know, these two individuals were so dedicated, offering to do pro bono for him. I mean, they were so vested in his innocence and believing it. And it all, so when you look at the data points that we're diving deeper on now and how it's looking like it does look like a conspiracy, and I'm not a conspiracy guy, but it looks like a bunch of people getting together to come up with an outcome that they're looking for. Now it starts making, because when those two defense attorneys first came up with the theory of Odinism, they were like, you know, like, I'm not an Odinism guy. I'm not like that. Yeah. But when you look at it in the totality, maybe not the idea of Odinism, but the idea that there's a cabal of wrong think going on, that's what I think they were really hitting on, because of all they had seen, because of all their experiences of looking at Richard Allen. And that's why they're so vested in him and his innocence, unlike I've seen other defense attorneys. I mean, it's just, this case just stands out from everything you and I have covered more than anything else for all these reasons.
There are the questions are just endless. With the Odinism thing, I wonder why they brought that up. I mean, I know that was actually initially in some of the investigative reports that were handed over to them, but it really didn't go into super detail until they really dug into it. That to me still feels like a far fetch, but I guess anything's possible here in this case. I'm just wondering why the Ron Logan part, I mean, that wasn't pushed stronger from the defense. And I know that it was, they weren't allowed to introduce a third party culprit, but why were they not screaming that to the public early on? I mean, the Ron Logan stuff happened in 2017. This was all way before they ever went after Richard Allen, and it was all right there.
You know, there's a possibility in all these cases, again, we'd have to talk to them to understand their mentality on this, but a lot of times when you're very, very close to something and you're at the 5-foot level and not the 30,000 foot level like we're talking, things are seem to be a lot more obvious and evident to you at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might have been very obvious to them that, oh, of course this is an Odinism because we have these data points to say this. And so it's easier to go down this road that looks obvious to us rather than trying to pursue what no one wants to pursue with Logan. That's the only thing I'm kind of think of, is it looked like an easier path for them from their optic than it was. Now, granted, when you pull back to the 30,000 foot level, it looks like what?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're at that smaller, more granular level, it might have been more obvious to them.
if this eventually does get another trial, which I hope it does, the sad part about all these appeals, initially they're going straight back to Gull, which is basically like screaming into a wall. Nothing will happen. It's going to have to get moved before anything actually takes place, which will probably take years. I mean, we're probably talking 5 years or more before there would be an actual another trial if everything goes right for Richard Allen to. And then you have to really hope that whatever judge hears that will take into the third party culprit evidence. I don't know how you wouldn't.
I know.
But Gull didn't. So there's no saying someone else won't. It's just, where does this go? I'm starting to wonder if they're just trying to bide their time and waiting for Richard Allen to die in prison, because he's already fragile. He's now in maximum security. God knows how he's being treated right now. You know, he's labeled a child killer. They don't tend to last very long in those sort of settings, innocent or guilty. I just wonder, and God, if there is a cover-up going on here too, if all these things have been because somebody didn't want something else to come out, I don't think it's a far cry from reality that someone would also try to influence someone in prison to do a hit on Richard Allen just to get him out of the picture. And then there's no more examining. Nobody's digging because he's dead and the case is done and this is where it's settled. That would not be shocking to me any day, as sad as that would be.
You took the words right out of my mouth. You know, that'd be tragic, but unfortunately, it wouldn't be surprising at this point. You know, because we keep saying, "Oh, it can't be conspiracy, it can't be this, and can't be that," but it keeps, all the data keeps bringing us there, because this is such a tragic injustice of our system, and it's not because I don't want to say the jury got it wrong. The jury did what the jury did, because that is our justice system. We have to have faith in the justice system. But the lack of other things that they didn't do on these other subjects is what was the real injustice here. They dove deep to try to frame one guy while ignoring the obvious. I mean, they avoided the elusive obvious. You know, there was, I would, as an investigator, I would have looked at Allen for a minute, and I would have kept it in the back of my mind as I pursued these other ones that fit a pattern of behavior.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the jury is also a victim of this. I think they were victimized in this, because I cannot imagine being one of those jurors now, knowing that you sent this father of two, this guy who worked at CVS, no criminal history, to basically his death in prison for the rest of his life, based on what little they gave you. If they're sitting there out there watching any of this or seeing the evidence that clearly points to other people, in the pit of your stomach, you got to be going, "Oh my God, we really got this wrong." But I don't blame them. They didn't have the information. So you can only do with what you have. And they painted a picture as best they could of Richard Allen being the guy. Now, if I was on that jury, I think I would have hung it, because I don't think it was remotely strong enough to go after Richard Allen. But the other cornucopia of pieces were also not there to reinforce that. But once you get out of that, serving on that jury, you can see all that now. And I think that's a whole other injustice right there. You have all these people now that are going to be, you know, there's mental trauma that's likely being caused because of whatever railroading job was done here.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was tragic, continues to be tragic, and I don't think you're ever going to right these wrongs.
No.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
All right, true crime addicts, let's cut the crap. You're knee-deep in the gory details of your favorite podcast when suddenly a commercial hits like a bad meal. Seriously? You deserve better. Upgrade to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, where you can binge without those annoying ads. Plus, get extended interviews that go deeper into the darkness and early access to episodes so you can be the first to know. It's like trading up from fast food to fine dining, but with more blood. So, go ahead, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and feast on the good stuff.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.